Welcome back to the Munichheim Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast, and one of the hosts thinks he should get paid like a guard. Guards are making a ton of money these days. That's, of course, Lenny. This is a very exciting and momentous episode because I think it's probably the first time in like 3 or 4 years that a true celebrity, maybe the most the most famous person I know, Dan Orlovsky, is gracing us with his presence today. Dan, welcome back for your triumphant return to the show.
Finally got you to admit it, that I am just that. I feel like there's like bottom line of intelligence level that's needed to come on the show, and I don't qualify. As I just said, it was borderline. So, good start.
Well, I feel like I feel like we podcasted together before NFL Live, right? Like, I think that's how we met, or
I think like one time, yeah. Okay. I definitely was on one time before, and I think it's been 36 plus months since. So. you have enough of me during the season.
Well, you're a very busy man. I feel like even doing that show was part of the reason why I was like pumped to do NFL Live, because I was like, Oh, this is amazing. Like, I'd love talking football with Dan. That's the last nice thing I'll say. That's enough. Okay. So we're going to talk about a few things today. We're going to get to the quarterbacks because the last taping I did was before Russell Wilson was traded to the Steelers. I want to talk to you about that. It was also, I sort of alluded to the Vikings acquiring Sam Darnold, and then they made the trade for the draft pick. So I want to talk to you about what the Vikings might, should, will do at quarterback and all the movement of the backups. But before we do that, in the second half of the show, I came up with a segment that I'm calling Did They Do Enough? Which is basically going through some teams, looking at the things they did in free agency to try to improve, particularly on offense, is what we're focused on. And what I want to discuss with you is whether they did enough to improve the circumstances for their quarterbacks. These are teams at different phases. There are teams that are, we got the Chiefs in here, Super Bowl contender, the Jets, who we're going to start with. And then we've got teams that are likely to have rookie quarterbacks, where I think if there's one thing we've learned from Carolina, it's that, boy, you got to do more than that. Carolina's one of the teams we're going to talk about. Let's start with the Jets, though, because this is the big news. They signed Mike Williams. It's basically a one-year deal. Up to has been doing a lot of work these days, $15 million. They also radically overhauled their offensive line. Now you've got Tyron Smith, also on a one-year deal. John Simpson, excellent guard from the Ravens. Morgan Moses, at right tackle, also from the Ravens, which means Bavera Tucker's guard, and then Tittman's at center. In addition to that, they brought in Tyrod Taylor, which is like quiet, but like important
matters,
as a backup.
Yeah,
it matters. So let me ask you, let's just start here. Did they do enough?
I think they did enough to, as we sit here in March, be like, hey, we got a really good football team and certainly contenders within their division. But the giant if makes me say no. You know, like, yes, if they all somehow stay healthy for the first time in what feels like forever on their offensive line, great. I think that probably the biggest dice roll in the NFL right now would be that Tyron Smith is going to be backing or protecting the backside of the 40-year-old quarterback coming off of the Achilles tear. You know, like that if the Jets somehow catch lightning in a bottle and hit on that, God bless them. You know, and so I think, you know, you sit there and say, absolutely, like roster-wise, if they were Super Bowl contenders that opening Monday night game, and I thought that they were last year, they're certainly Super Bowl contenders now because I would say the roster's better, specifically offensively. But it is those giant ifs. And so that's why I sit there. Like, I saw someone, you know, say, like, man, the Jets can maybe take a quarterback at 10 if the guy that they love fell and for the future. I still think that they have depth. So upgraded, yes. Do enough, no.
I would absolutely take a tackle. And I know a receiver will be tempting, especially if one of the big three falls, as Odunze, Neighbors, M.A. Shea. But at 10, which is where they're picking, you're going to have your pick of some outstanding tackles. And to your point, I mean, first of all, Tyron Smith is not, even if Tyron Smith was like this paragon of health, I would still take a tackle.
Sure.
Because it's a one-year contract. You have to rebuild this offensive line. And I think with Rodgers, it's more important that you bring in that necessary depth than it is that you go out and get him another weapon. I will say this about Mike Williams, and you know, all the caveats apply. When he is healthy, I'd love the fit. with Garrett Wilson. I mean, how do you see those two players? Like, again, big caveat, if healthy, yes. How do you see them on the field together and like working off of each other?
Yeah, I mean, Mike's a top five vertical threat in the game, you know, when on the field. I think, you know, what has hampered Garrett, and I love Garrett, outside of the obvious quarterback play is, you know, Garrett really is the I want to work somewhere underneath 15-yard world. He's really good in and out of his cuts. He's super sudden out of breaks. You know, he's I don't want to call him a possession receiver, but he is in many ways the guy that you just – he's going to wear out, you know, all aspects of the field horizontally, but not so much vertically. Mike then brings that vertical element, that vertical stretch. I always say this, like it's an accordion, right? You know, if the accordion is only at 50% expansion, then your offense doesn't have a ton of space. But when it gets fully stretched out, there's so much more room for a player like Garrett to work. And so I think – you know, I would put them third in the AFC, again, if Mike's healthy, as far as wide receiver duo behind, obviously, Cincinnati and Miami. So if he stays, he's a walking explosive play. And I that's obviously huge for Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Williams, when he's been healthy over the last 3 years, tight window throw catch rate, second amongst all receivers. Pickens is higher, but he's had fewer targets. His catch rate over expected, which is the next gen stat, second amongst all receivers. Aaron Rodgers is going to back shoulder him to the moon.
A ton.
Come on. Yeah. Like this is, again, it's just, it's hard. It's always hard to talk about the Jets because it's like, if they're healthy, like this is such good offense, but a major caveat supply. One more thing about that offensive line. I love this for Breece Hall. Simpson, I thought Dan was awesome. Run blocker last year for Baltimore. And you bring in Moses from Baltimore as well. A very different run game from what Baltimore does, but love it on the zone stuff that they're going to do in this offense. It should be.
I like too, I don't mean to cut you off, but like Simpson and Moses, really dominant run game guys. Tippmann comes from Wisconsin, dominant run game guy. So, you know, three out of their five offensive linemen, identity wise, are really run game people. Obviously, Tyron, future Hall of Famer, and AVT can kind of do it all. So, you know, getting back to the point of the offensive linemen at 10, the older quarterbacks that have gone on, like we talked about it on the show last year, Matthew Stafford had this unbelievable year as an older quarterback. The overwhelming thing that happened for the Rams was they were so good up front on their offensive line. So it gave them time. Obviously, go back a couple years ago with Tom, older quarterback. Why did Tampa have such success offensively? Because they protected him. So I don't think the Jets can have enough good offensive linemen.
Okay, so the next team I want to talk about is something I feel like not enough people are discussing. So this, over the last week, there's been some discourse about the Bears. Our colleague Robert Griffin III put out a take that was like, Caleb Williams should demand his way out. Both you and I agree. I think that I know that the Bears did do enough.
Sure.
Because of the Bears. That's not what I want to talk about. We really should be talking about the Patriots because, first of all, the assumption is they're going to take a quarterback at 3. Dan, I'm looking at this depth chart.
Yep.
I'm worried for this quarterback. So in free agency, they bring back Kendrick Bourne, who I like Kendrick Bourne a lot.
Sure.
They add KJ Osborne. I like KJ Osborne. Right now, this is like a great group of 2 and 3 receivers. You got Juju Bourne, Douglas, who I thought popped a little bit last year. His name's Pop. His name's Pop.
Yeah,
Osborne. You bring in Austin Hooper, fine, whatever. You add Antonio Gibson, okay. Offensive line, still issues.
Massive left side.
Dude.
Yeah.
I do not think this team has done enough to support whatever rookie they draft.
100% agree. You know, going into last season, I was like, this is the bottom 3 skill group in the NFL. I don't think I feel that different this year. I agree with you on some of those pieces. Here's where, like, New England, one, they don't really have a speed guy. The left side of their offensive line is a weakness. The right side, I think, is solid.
Greg Beck and Wenu.
Yeah. Wenu coming back, and then Sidy Sow, on the right guard, like, looks promising. We'll see. I think it's like, I have been adamant. 2 things about New England. I'm okay with you taking a quarterback in the top 5 at 3, but you have to break the mold of oh, well, he's a top five pick, so we're going to play him. Like, you have to sit him. Mm. And the interesting thing about, Elliot Wolf, who's their acting general manager, has been at three places that took first-round quarterbacks. Go back, and he was in Green Bay when they took Aaron, sat him, built the roster up, and got it really healthy. It was already, but, like, really had good pieces around him. He plugged some plays at a high level. Then he was in Cleveland when they took Baker at number one. Baker gets thrust onto the field and has some highs, but obviously crashes down and has lows because the roster wasn't good enough. And then he's in New England when they take Mac, and Mac goes onto the field and he knows, okay, rookie quarterback or young quarterback, bad roster, falls apart. Now, I'm not saying those people are exclusive to, like, not having some hand in that, but I just think if you're New England and you're Elliott Wolf and you're honest about who your football team is and talent-wise,
yeah,
you can't take a quarterback and expect that person to play and play well within the first year or two. So I sit there and go, prime candidate to go back and just rebuild your roster.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that take, because what you're saying, it's less about the rawness of the quarterback and more about the situation that quarterback is walking into.
Sure.
This to me is like where we look at what happened with Carolina last year. I see a lot of similarities in terms of the lack of separation amongst the skill players, some question marks on the offensive line. And I thought that Panthers offensive line was better going into last year. I was wrong.
By far.
This offensive line needs a ton of work. They also have a caretaker quarterback in Jacoby Brissett, who you're reuniting him with Alex Van Pelt from Cleveland. We know the kind of offense that he wants to run. We know that Brissett, who's like the perfect transition quarterback, can run it capably. I'm inclined to agree with you. And they really need to stock up. I mean, this is a great draft for O-line and receivers. They need to go
exactly
crazy on offense and like crazy.
Yeah, I don't think they've done enough to take a young player and put him on the field. I don't, and I think that they're in such a good place. It's like, let's live in a hypothetical world, MK2, where it's 1-2 Caleb and Jaden. The last guy that you're going to want to put out there behind that group is going to be Drake, because mechanically he has so much to improve upon. And to take a mechanically flawed player and put them behind a, you know, poor offensive line without people that have the ability to get open, like you're preparing yourself to be 3 or 4 years behind the curve when it comes to the NFL.
You know, there's been a lot of conversation lately about sitting rookie quarterbacks and some of the failures of the last, especially as the 2021 class really has not aged well and everybody's traded places. And I think some of that is a little bit overblown, because all you have to do is go back 1 year and there's been a lot of successes. Like 2018 through 2020, you have at least 10 starters, not even counting like Darnold, you know, but so I do think it's just there were two bad years. However, I think if there is one takeaway, it is about the failures, is that we probably underestimated situation. And I think when we have this discussion, should they play, should they sit? That to me is more important. Even like if Drake May is raw, like you feel like he's raw.
Yeah.
However, if the Vikings, who we're going to talk about later, went up and got Drake May, I would be much more comfortable with Drake May playing quickly.
Absolutely.
New England, very different situation.
Yeah, I think so. When it comes to specifically Drake May, he's played a ton of college football and he's got a gajillion snaps. So it's not the concern you had of, say, like a Trey Lance, who is obviously very talented but very raw, and you're like, well, he has to play because he's got to get those reps. Minnesota, I feel like I could go play at Minnesota, because if we're talking about the things that are needed for a young quarterback to play well, number one, you want him to be in a healthy scheme. Okay, so we know that Kevin O'Connell runs that Shanahan McVay scheme. Yeah, two, you got to have an elite play caller. We have seen Kevin O'Connell become that. Number three, you have to have a above average to really good offensive line. Minnesota has that. And then four, you got to have people to, you know, win and get the ball to. Minnesota has all of that, where New England, outside of, you know, me thinking, you know, Alex Van Pelt has obviously come from this tree a little bit. And I think he's had moments as a good play caller. Like there's no stamp on any of those five in New England.
Yeah, and like, who are the real difference makers? I think Stevenson is a really good back.
Sure.
Again, I like a lot of those receivers as like twos and threes.
Twos and threes, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more that it needs to be done. Let's talk about the Panthers. I alluded to the Panthers. This was a disaster last year. It was truly, you know, we talk a lot about, I mean, Justin Fields and what the Bears have done or not done around him has been a big topic, but boy, did the Panthers muck this up last year with Bryce Young. It's not totally exonerate Bryce Young, whose play was pretty inconsistent. So big moves in free agency, just to, you know, they pay Robert Hunt $100 million. Yeah. Damian Lewis from Seattle, another guard, 4 years, $53 million. So you got a new look offensive line. You're going to have Icky, Lewis, Corbett, Hunt, Taylor Moten, who's their best offensive lineman. They acquired via trade Deontay Johnson from the Steelers, and they released Hayden Hurst, and they re-signed Amir Smith-Marset. So right now their receiver group is Deontay Johnson, Adam Thielen, Jonathan Mingo. Did they do enough?
No. No, but it's unrealistic for us to expect them to. Like, I have said this, MK, 2025 is the year that matters for me a little bit when we come to really sitting here and asking, did they do enough to, okay, Bryce, can you finally take a really good positive step forward? I do like the fact that the interior of the offensive line was addressed. And I do like the trade for Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson, I think, is a really good two in the NFL. Okay, so he is, I don't think he's proven to be a number one. So they still don't have a number one receiver. And really good twos aren't really good twos without number ones. Okay, so, you know, the really good two that has to be the one usually plays lesser than they are. So they haven't done enough to really allow Bryce to take that step. They've got four picks in the top, I think, 101 picks of the NFL draft. I'm not ready to say that the Icky pick is just a complete bust because there was such promise in his rookie year. And I do think that Dave Canales will run the football a little bit more, or at least try to. They're still, you know, they're not all that different than New England. Like, they need offensive linemen and they need perimeter talent. And so until they really upgrade with that, it's still not enough.
They're a team where I don't think this is going to happen, but like, if they had a T. Higgins to pair with Deontay Johnson, I would feel really good about that pairing. I mean, I will say I haven't talked about this. I think it happened after last week I taped. I really like what Johnson's specific skill set does for Bryce Young. He gets open. He gets open. Young last year, so many reps, you'd have to watch the tape to see this. Nobody was open. Yep. And one of the things I loved about his game in college, comes up quick. He throws with anticipation, but you could see that degrading as the year went on because nobody was getting open and he developed bad habits, frankly, because of it, which is again, really such a problem for a young quarterback. So you bring in a guy whose calling card is getting open. Now, what he does when he gets open is why he's not number one.
Yeah.
Cause he doesn't always come down with the football, but he gets open. And I think that's so important for Bryce Young. I do think they still need that true number one boundary receiver.
No question.
There's a lot of them in the draft. I think there'll be some at 33 when they finally pick. There's just a lot of really big bodied X receivers. So it's an incomplete for me in terms of whether they did enough.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the 33rd pick usually isn't this, man, this is a massive pick in the NFL world. It's a massive pick for Carolina. Agreed. They have to take wide receiver and they have to take the right one. Like, they took Mingo last year. And we'll see. After 1 year, it certainly seems like they bet on the physical talent, and that necessarily didn't show itself last year or this past season. Like, so my mind goes to the 33rd pick, and it's, well, if A.D. Mitchell from Texas is there, you're like, let me run to the podium as quickly as possible.
If A.D. Mitchell from Texas is there, I'm asking the Chiefs what the hell went wrong.
Yeah, correct. You know, but like, if you can luck into that, fantastic for you. Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky, like, if he's there, you feel good about it. If Leggett's there from South Carolina, you'll like it, but you're also banking on, again, some of those physical traits just transitioning. And the last thing you want, because I think the point of the anticipation for Bryce matters because of this. And until you're in it, it's really hard to describe, but the difference in 0.2 seconds in the NFL is basically a lifetime. And when a quarterback starts to doubt what his eyes are telling him, what his instincts are telling him, when he can cut it loose and, okay, like, one of the things that Bryce, to your point, was, you know, he was never hesitant to cut it loose in college. The last thing you want is for a 2-year span for him to start becoming trigger shy and hesitant and whatnot, because that's hard to erase. It just is. And I think, you know, the pick at 33 has got to be someone where maybe the offensive line isn't going to be perfect, but like, they got to get somebody that Bryce has a high level of that anticipation, trust in.
I feel like there was a play, it might have been like week one or two, where he threw it, like the ball came out so quickly. I think it was like a curl or something, or a comeback, and he put it in the perfect spot. And I don't remember which the receivers, it was Thielen or whatever.
Yeah.
They just didn't get over. And I was like, oh, yeah. God, this is not going to go well for him.
I called the money. I think week two, I called their Monday night game versus New Orleans. And I just remember some point, like mid third quarter, they had 100 yards of offense. And I was like, no one is open.
Okay. You know who's going to get open? Marquise Hollywood Brown. This will be quick, because the Chiefs, obviously, you know, won the Super Bowl. Not a lot of work to done, although receiver, question mark. They go out, they get Marquise Brown. It's a 1-year deal. It's super great signing. For the Chiefs, it's very low risk. We've talked about this a million times with the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, 31st in average depth of target last year. The percentage of passes he had that went over 20 yards was amongst the lowest in the NFL. Passes over 20 yards, of course, had the highest drop rate in the NFL. Yeah. Brown struggled a bit with drops, but he's better than MVS. So my question for you isn't, did the Chiefs did enough? Do you feel like this might make you move off a receiver in the first round? Because I think that's the question that comes out of this.
No, I think what might make me move off a receiver in the first round is there a tight end that they love in this draft? You know, I know that they've signed Irv Smith, but I think about it like this, MK. Like, we know what the Chiefs' goal is. Their goal is to get the 3-peat, okay? So I look at it in regards to, is there a way that, all right, we love this tight end, and I don't think, obviously, late first round, but maybe a trade back or whatnot. We love this tight end in the second round that is going to allow us to plug and play at a good level and almost like load manage Travis Kelce throughout the season. Because, you know, we saw it this past year. Kelce started to peak late in the season. And so is there a way, you know, like, that would be the only thing that I could see getting me off of that first round receiver or a likely first round receiver. I know they still questions that tackle for them, with Wanye probably being the left tackle, but I lean wide receiver, but I do think that there's a chance philosophically that they say, let's get a young tight end and we can kind of cut the reps a little bit early in the season on Kelce.
Tackle's interesting because in recent years, the approach has been low cost free agency. Okay, we're going to, well, not low cost. They paid Juwan Taylor a lot of money, but they bring in Donovan Smith on the 1-year deal. And there's, I think,
Smith, we'll mask it. Yeah.
Smith is still a free agent, right? So he might come back.
Correct.
But this is a very good tackle draft in addition to being a very good receiver draft. So I think it really depends on who's available there, right? Like, if a guy they really like Guyton out of Oklahoma or someone is there at 32, I think that has to be an option. I think as far as like the Kelce and the tight end and the receiver of it all, you do have to start thinking about your post Travis Kelce world.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, right? Because he is such a hybrid player. Like, in some ways, yes, he's a tight end, and so much of what they do, have they done the last couple of years, it's been with these multiple tight end sets. However, he's also like an ex receiver. He is a guy they line up, they ISO him. He is the guy who finds those spaces in zone coverage. So I think if there was a receiver there who fits that archetype, you also consider taking him. You just have to start thinking about, okay, what happens after Kelce? And to your point, how can we manage Kelce moving forward?
Yeah, and also, like, what happens after potentially Hollywood? You know, I mean, Hollywood's on that 1-year deal, to your point. And Rasheed obviously was so good his rookie year and he came on, but you're going to want vertical speed after the 2024 season. And so, you know, if Hollywood goes and plays to the level that they are certainly expecting him to, he's gone. He's going to get paid by somebody else more. And so, like, having those two young studs, if you took a Rashee Rice going into year 3 and paired him with a really good young fast receiver that would be going into year 2 that you take in this upcoming draft, then you again have your plethora of talent on the outside.
Yeah. I love the way Brown and Rice will play off of each other.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just the room that Rasheed Rice will have.
The only thing I would say this though is they don't, again, outside of Travis, and they won the Super Bowl, but like life is hard. Like they don't have a person that's a winner with routes, yeah. Like a route person, you know, Rasheed was a straight line person. That's what he became, and Hollywood is as well. Like it would be interesting to see if they were like, you know what, let's find some. Now Patrick doesn't play on time like that ton. But it would be interesting to see if they looked for that.
Yeah. Right. Like it's not Juju, but like also like, you know, the RPOs, yeah. Which is a big component of their offense. Yeah. Like who's the RPO guy that can win exactly. Over the middle too. Okay. Let's wrap really quickly before we take a break with the Bears. I alluded to this. I wanted to bring it up in the contrast of the Patriots because I was like, this is the team we should all really be worried about. I am not worried about the Bears because holy smokes, this roster looks great. Like I really like everything they've done. I really like what this all means for Caleb Williams.
So I said this, I texted some people trying to find a comp. This could be the best situation a number one pick has walked into at quarterback ever in the history of the draft. I don't know who the comp is. Just in the context of it, because of some of the pieces and moves. Okay, so I'll go back to last year, MK. The last eight games of the year, this was the number one defense in the NFL points per game, 17 points per game. So I'm not saying they're going to be the number one defense, but obviously played at a much improved level. Good defense, right? And so then you take that and then you go with you two wide receivers who last year, combined for over 200 catches and 2,500 yards in both Keenan and DJ. Okay, so those two wide receivers. And then you have your two tight ends and you bring over Ryan Bates. And so your offensive line is a really strong unit. The skill players are really strong. You get a back in DeAndre Swift who's coming off of a career year. And so you're trying to find like a comp to go, well, Andrew Luck had T.Y. Hilton and Reggie Wayne, but not the cumulative talent. And I just think it's a very – and two top 10 picks. You know, so it's a very, very healthy situation for whatever quarterback it sounds like it'd be Caleb Williams to go into.
What I love too is at pick 9, there's so many things they could do.
I mean,
you could go if one of the big three receivers is there, like Odunze, that's tempting. If one of the top tackles is there, like Atalius Fuaga out of Oregon State, that's tempting. Or you probably want to go with a left tackle, he's more right tackle. But point at Olu, maybe, I don't know. There's just a lot of options available to them because of the quality of it. You could go defense too, and honestly wouldn't be upset at that point.
Yeah.
I do think they've done enough on offense. You do have to start thinking about, you know, Keenan Allen, it's a flyer, right? Sure. It's a one-year deal, and health has been an issue, so you got to start thinking about, in the same way we've been talking about the Chiefs, what's next. But I love what that trade does specifically for Williams because year one is all about getting him to play in structure.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very few receivers who I think of when I think in the NFL and I think of a quarterback playing in structure and I think of a receiver who gets open and runs precise routes and is reliable and has great hands. That's Keenan Allen. Like
totally. See, that's why
I trust him immediately.
I agree. But that's why I think number 9 is like a lock wide receiver for them, in my opinion, because well, yeah, I mean, if one of those three, I don't even mind if they take a Brian Thomas out of LSU at 9. Here's my reasoning why.
That's rich.
Yes, but we're talking about winners and separating and getting open, right? Kind of going back to the conversation we had about Bryce. I don't have hesitation or reservation of like, hey, man, our offensive line's going to be good, not great. I'm good with Caleb, you know, being able to kind of mask that, cover that up a little bit. If I'm focusing on the development of him, I want it to be like, hey, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, ball comes out. And to be able to do that, you got to have guys that are consistently getting open. Guys, not singular, you know. And so I think the addition of that dynamic third receiver for them allows him to play and or develop that faster pace of play from the pocket and from structure.
I'll throw out one more name, Bowers. I know that they just added Gerald Everett. They have Cole Kmet, who's a really good tight end. Shane Waldron, new offensive coordinator, loves multiple tight end sets. We saw that in Seattle.
Right.
if you thought Keenan Allen, I mean, well, sorry, that's sacrilege. Keenan Allen is a quarterback's best friend, but boy, so is Brock Bowers.
Yeah. And you know what? And again, I don't want to make this just kind of like low hanging fruit comp, but not only is Shane in Seattle, but Shane in LA. Yeah. And Shane in LA saw Cooper. And I'm not saying that Brock is Cooper Kupp, but there are similarities to the way that they run their routes and use their body and lean into defenders and set things up that, you know, you could run a lot of those concepts that are built around the choice routes that Cooper Kupp kind of perfected with Brock.
Good day for Bears fans. All right, let's take a quick break. Speaking of, and talk about the other side of the Bears and what happened with Justin Fields.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.com. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Okay, Dan. So we've had a lot of time to process the Justin Fields trade to the Steelers. There's been, I'm sure people listening to this have listened to a lot of analysis about whether the Bears got enough and what we all got wrong and what we all got wrong. I mean, not with regards to Fields, the prospect, but the return they got. I don't really want to relitigate that. I think, you know, there's multiple reasons for why he went for as little as he did, including it's been reported that the Bears maybe took a little bit less. I don't know. We'll see. Or not, we'll see. I guess we'll never know. But I want to talk to you about Fields in Pittsburgh. So when the Steelers signed Russ, I said I loved it because the value, I don't see how you cannot. And now they got another great value in Justin Fields. Now, at first, there's been a lot of mixed reporting over whether Russ is the starter and who has the job. It's March, y'all. Like, none of that means anything to me. It seems to me to be very obvious that they should be allowed to compete. And if that were to happen, well, first you can tell me if you agree, how do you think it would go?
Well, I do think it'll end up being a competition. I think, because maybe, and I know I'm in the smaller camp of this, I'm a little bit higher on Justin Fields still as a player than most people, and I still believe he has this unique physical talent. I think this comes down to this, MK, and this will be a little bit more in your world. So if it's an open competition or maybe like the potential, it's whoever of those two guys is going to, and I'm not going to say fix their fatal flaw, but like somewhat reduce the fatal flaw. You know, like two of the things that you look at in the last two seasons, Russell has taken 100 sacks. Justin has taken 99. Yeah. No other quarterback in the NFL has more than 80. Mm-hmm. So which one of those guys, and that's going to be tough to get a feel for in preseason and games. But like at some point, I think, you know, like what guy shows that they can just minimize that a little bit in Arthur Smith's offense. And then negative plays, that group of three things, the sacks and then fumbles and interceptions. Justin has 145 negative plays in the last two seasons. Hmm. Russell has 135 negative plays in the last two seasons. No other quarterback in the league has a buck 15. So again, I'll go back to that. Like, which one of those guys can, like, just take 10% off of that, maybe, or 7% off of that? Because I do think the style of play that Pittsburgh, both Arthur Smith and organizationally, wants to play, like, it leans into what guy is going to get that under control just a little bit better.
It's interesting that they ended up with these two quarterbacks because, to your point, they do have a lot of really similar flaws over the last few years. Both Justin or Russ, 31st in time to pass last year, Justin 32nd. You talked about the sack rate, both very low number of intermediate attempts. So, you know, I think to your point, it is a little bit of a question of like, okay, who can get a little bit better at some of the things that they've struggled with, because they have struggled in a weirdly similar fashion. I will say one thing that I find interesting, where I was kind of looking at some of the splits to see where they diverged. Russ was better off of play action, but there's that isn't just about the quarterback, in my opinion. Fields was a lot better throwing between the numbers than Russ last year. He was 8th in QBR. Russ was 25th. This has always been an issue with Russell Wilson in his career. And I think that's where Arthur Smith comes in, because I really think if it is a competition, a big part of the big deciding factor will just be Arthur Smith deciding who can I work with here? Like with Fields, does he look at him and he remembers what he did with Mariota as a dual threat? Does he look at Fields and does he want to capture that upside? Because if that's
the
so,
thing for me,
I would go with Fields.
Yeah. I mean, how many times did we sit on last year in relation to Arthur Fields in Atlanta? And two things. One, and I honestly thought this going into last season, so almost a year ago this time, where I was like, oh, Desmond Ridder, pretty darn good athlete.
Yeah.
I could see Arthur Smith trying to replicate some of the stuff that Philadelphia did with Jalen Hurts and tapping into that to make it easier on everybody. That didn't happen. And then Justin Fields in Chicago, not going well. Where did he get traded? Atlanta. Why? Because of Arthur Smith. And I think the element of – and that, like, that will be a swing. If Arthur Smith wants to lean into some of that stuff and utilize Justin's elements of that, well, I think it gives a massive advantage to Justin Fields. If he doesn't, and whether it's an organizational thing, a coach thing, Mike Tomlin, and they don't want to do that, then it's going to be like, my thing with Justin is this: can you play faster? I don't think it's an intellect thing. I know, can your eyes be quicker, and can your throwing motion just, you know, again, go bang to 0.2 seconds. So those are two things that I pay attention to with that as well.
Also, regardless of who plays quarterback, they need another receiver. And we talked about the Deontay Johnson trade. I'm sure there's, as often is the case with Pittsburgh, like a ton of behind the scenes stuff we don't know that Mike Tomlin has like covered up over the year. I don't, like, because he wanted out and whatever. But right now, you know, they've got a really good tight end in Freiermuth. They have you know, Washington is blocker, more of a blocker. Pickens is the number one for sure. And I think Pickens pairs well with both these quarterbacks. You need a number two. You have Calvin Austin, who's a fast guy. Great run game, offensive line improved, could still add there. So I don't care who's playing quarterback. This offense is not going to be better unless they add someone at receiver.
Well, don't forget, George, too, now steps into a completely different role and completely different expectation level. I agree. They need to go get another receiver. You know, this is an organization that's got a huge kind of background on and doing it really the right way. You know, I'll go back to Atlanta with Arthur Smith. One of the reasons, again, and reasons why, you know, that offense struggled and failed outside of Desmond through too many interceptions was like they just didn't have any vertical speed. You know, for that play action pass to work, like you have to be able to build the layers and build the levels of the defense. I do think George is capable of that, but then you're getting the person opposite George to take advantage of the vacated space. I kind of lean towards like, hey, Pittsburgh needs to get a speedster, a person that is a vertical threat person. And then George is the person that, you know, plays the AJ Green type of role in this, what should be play action pass heavy offense.
I didn't mention this at all when it happened, but to your point about the Falcons, quietly love the Darnell Mooney signing as a third, second option. You got Drake London. I love that addition. I think Kirk Cousins is going to throw him a million passes. Okay, well, let's wrap speaking. Well, this is a different quarterback. We nodded to the Vikings. I do want to talk to you about the Vikings because right now they're the most interesting team in the NFL. They don't hold the keys to the draft. They want the keys, basically. Yeah. They did pay Sam Darnold, and it was like a real deal, which is kind of interesting. You and I have always been
Sam people.
Low-key Sam people, but and honestly, he might be okay in this offense, but it's no secret that they want a quarterback. They now have picks 11 and 23. What I think is fascinating about this, Dan, is you know, you they make that trade, and apparently the Texans brought it to them, which I thought was really interesting. So you make that trade, and the first thought is like, oh, they want to move into pick three, pick two. Increasingly, it seems like that's not going to happen. Now, if that was an option, I think they would take it. I keep hearing they love Drake May. You and I talked about that. That would make a ton of sense. However, I think equally likely, if the top three teams stay put, of course, is that this is about J.J. McCarthy. The pressure point in the draft, or the pivot point rather, is basically above New York. And yep. After New York, there's no other teams who would take a quarterback, so a team would be jumping the Vikings. How do you feel about that generally? I mean, how do you feel about the idea of the Minnesota Vikings giving up real draft capital to go up, leapfrog the Giants, maybe the Chargers, heck, yep. And to go get J.J. McCarthy?
Okay, so I like J.J. McCarthy. I really do. I think he's the most consistent quarterback in this draft class. Okay, hear me out. Consistent.
Yeah.
He's also the quarterback that I think was afforded that opportunity the best because, I mean, you have games where you only write down five plays.
Yes.
At least I do because he's just not asked to
quick
do it
watch.
You get yeah, right, you know, right. Like, hey, run. If we break down Kevin O'Connell's offense and how it, you know, Kirk thrived under it, you're trying to figure out specific to Kirk why that happened. I wrote down, okay, number one, he's got rare timing with his feet and the rhythm when it's tied to the pass game. That does not happen overnight. JJ is a savant in that stuff. He's fantastic when it comes to that thing. Number two, he's got elite conviction when where he's going to throw the football. Like he does not, you know, the ball, because you're turning your back to defense in this play action pass offense so much. So you got to be convicted with what your eyes are telling you. No one in this class is more convicted with where they're throwing the ball than McCarthy. I mean, sometimes I'm like, if do you remember that touchdown pass he had against Ohio State?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everyone's like, I'm like, a linebacker, literally, the ball went through it, the middle of his chest almost. I think three, he's obsessed with the details of the play action pass game. And I'm talking about from the snap on, like where you're putting the ball into your belly and how you're turning your back to defense and the extension of the handoff fake. I think McCarthy is very high level at that. And then the fourth thing is, like, and you've heard me say this, Kirk did a great job of allowing the offense to be the star. And so therefore, his stats became the star of the offense almost. You know what I'm saying? Like it was never trying to go make plays. The plays are going to be there. And so I think there's a lot of similarities and that you could sit there and say, put McCarthy in right now. And the starting point is going to be pretty good.
It's kind of like if you were to, you know, like with AI, you enter like a prompt and then it spits out what your prompt is.
You think I know what AI is?
Okay, Dan. Well, you say what you want, and then the ChatGPT spits it out. J.J. McCarthy is like if I typed into ChatGPT, show me a Shanahan quarterback.
Yeah, like, totally.
Throws over the middle of the field, plays on time, manages the pocket well. Athletic. He has functional athleticism, I like to call it. Yep. He has all of those qualities. I think the question is, okay, but will he elevate the offense? Does he have special tools? If he's moved off of his spot, you know, and forced to create, can he create? A lot of question marks in large part because, as you alluded to, the sample size really small with him through no fault of his own, arguably.
Right. Yeah. I think like the third downs for him, you know, have got to be a big deal when you're studying JJ. It's like, okay, it's third and seven plus, and everybody now knows you're throwing the ball. How good was that? And again, there's a little bit, you know, he's going to have probably two top three round tight ends go. He's going to have a top three round wide receiver go. He's going to have four offensive linemen drafted, maybe five. You know, he's got a back that's going to be a top two round pick. So I do think that I would say this, you know, JJ, I think is plenty capable and athletic enough to go create. And yeah. I just, again, I think like when you, I hate the term, like he's the most pro ready. You're trying to find the best player. I just think the consistency in which he plays
right.
bodes well to him going and having a high. I don't want to say that he's, I think like if you took Matt Ryan and you took Brock Purdy and you gave them a stronger arm, that's JJ McCarthy.
Ooh. No Matt Ryan slander allowed on this podcast.
I love Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan 2016 is like my one of my things that I beat the drum on for being the one of the most underrated. Well, I mean, he was MVP. So I guess just the thing about JJ, you say pro ready and I'm like, yes, for Minnesota.
Correct. Yeah.
If he was drafted by the Patriots, I'd be like, oh, this is not going to go well.
No.
And it really is. And we're going to have a lot of time between now and the draft to discuss this and whether he's worth it. What's worth it to Minnesota might not be worth it to another team because of the timeline that they're on their roster, because of the quality of the roster, because of the type of quarterback they want. It's what makes the draft so unique. Context is everything.
I also think this too, you know, like just specific to JJ is, you want to see him throw more balls with touch and some love. You know, everything is a freaking fastball.
Yes.
But I think that's
really good point.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I waver back and forth like, well, it's accurate. The ball's at the right place, you know, but does it have to be drilled all the time? You know, are you capable of it a little bit more? But I agree. Like Minnesota is, I think you and I probably both agree. No matter what quarterback goes to Minnesota, probably going to play well.
I agree. Okay, last question before I let you go, because now you got to do SportsCenter, so we'll be quick. A lot of quarterbacks switch teams. I'm going to name them all and tell me which quarterback you think plays, and this is not because of injury, plays in a meaningful game, starts maybe next year. We had Sam Howell traded to Seattle, Mac Jones to Jacksonville, Desmond Ridder to Arizona, Drew Lock to New York. He signed with New York, wasn't traded. Jacoby, I guess that would be the answer. So we'll throw out Jacoby because you and I talked about that.
Yep.
And then finally, Jameis. To Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, the easy one for me is Jameis. You know, I think that it's been 3 years since we have seen a consistent high level of play from Deshaun. And obviously the health is now into a question and where exactly all of that sits. I think it's a huge signing by Cleveland. I've felt that way. And then the other one I would say is Drew Lock. I could see Drew Lock playing snaps in New York that matter.
And here's one reason why. Daniel Jones, contract, guaranteed big money this year. Next year, guaranteed for injury. Could totally see a situation where New York, end of the year, Daniel Jones, if he hasn't been playing well, they're like, we don't look like Russell Wilson. We don't want
Russell Wilson. This. Yeah.
So that sneaky, I know John Schneider caused a little bit of drama when he said Drew Lock went there to compete, but I bet there's some veracity to that.
Sure.
All right, Dan, this is great. This is really fun. You've got to go do NFL Live, talk about Caleb Williams. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you, as always, to Kirsten Sebecki, Owen Saylor, Anthony Jimenez for producing. And I will be back with another mock draft, this one with Greg McElroy.
Thanks for having me, MK.